All right, welcome back to the Read Like a Gilmore podcast. My name is Liz, and today we are going to review the book Mommy Dearest. So we have that to look forward to. For those of you who this may be your first time listening to the podcast, the way this works is I am reading through the Rory Gilmore reading list, except I'm doing it chronologically as books are referenced in the show. And because I'm doing it that way, I'm also evaluating the reference, seeing if there is a correlation between the book that is being referenced and the underlying story. Is there a deeper meaning behind it? Is it just a reference as a throwaway, we needed a book here type of reference? Then reviewing the actual book itself and giving it a rating, saying whether or not we like it, saying whether or not we think it's well written, all of that. So we will jump right into it. Today's book is Mommy Dearest. The reference in the show is in a scene. We have Rory and Lorelai have had a fight, and Rory has come to the Dragonfly, which is where Lorelai works, and she's being cold, and Lorelai looks at her and says, "So are you going to give me the Mommy Dearest treatment forever?" I thought it was an interesting scene. I've never fully understood this scene, period. It's never made sense to me in the context of the show, because for one, I believe they're supposed to be going to dinner on Friday. They're Friday night dinners. So I'm guessing she came after school, like, because dinner's at 7, is said a little later. But it's just such an odd scene. Like, she literally shows up. She said, you know, she left a note to meet her there and said, "I thought maybe you could help out for a few hours and you could make a little extra cash." And then she sends her away immediately. It's just, I don't know. I guess it's just establishing that they're, like, fighting. For some reason, I've never understood the timing of the show. It just seemed strange to me that she wasn't in school. Like, just something about it makes me think that she's supposed to be in school, or, like, it was supposed to be, like, Saturday, but the dinner was supposed to be Friday. Just the scene never fully made sense, in my opinion. And I think it's because that's why. Because the scene before, she had packed up her locker. Like, that was her last day at Stars Hollow High. And now we cut to, she's not in school on a Friday. It was weird. And maybe it's because of the transfer. I don't know. I feel like you would still go to school. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. It just seemed weird. I feel like it gave the vibes that it's like a Saturday, but it's also supposed to be Friday night dinner. And it's just, everything's just bizarre about it, in my opinion. I think it's a weird scene. For the actual reference, that was the other thing that really confused me about the comment, is that she mentions, "You're giving me the Mommy Dearest treatment." And I'm not really sure how that fits in with the actual way that she's behaving. Like, she's very cold towards her, but I don't know. I even watched the movie, which I'm not going to pretend that I paid great attention to the movie. It definitely didn't feel like it was referencing the book. So I watched the movie, and then I even more didn't really understand the reference, because I didn't fully get what Rory's doing here, just being cold to her. I don't understand why that's the Mommy Dearest treatment. I guess that's where I don't fully understand it. But this is a quote from Lorelai instead of Rory. So that off the bat makes me think it's less of a reference to the book Mommy Dearest and more of a reference to the movie Mommy Dearest, kind of similar to the Rosemary's Baby. Rosemary's Baby was more obviously
the movie reference because we actually got a reference to the actress in Rosemary's Baby, whereas this, it's just the title, which the book and the movie were both titled Mommy Dearest. But we get more of an idea because, one, it's Lorelai making the reference. She's definitely more the movie TV show buff than, you know, the literary buff that Rory is. I think the reference is more serving the purpose of showing that kind of, like, way of, like, that style of speaking that Lorelai has, where she has these quick little witty references to cultural things, like pop culture, movies, TV, like that. So I don't know. I feel like it's a rough fit. I don't think it's the best reference that could have been used here, just because I don't think in its entirety it makes sense. I don't think that the treatment Rory's giving her is Mommy Dearest treatment. And I feel like normally you would use that in the opposite direction. Like, you would kind of be saying that, you know, if there was somebody who was going off, like a mom going off the rails on her daughter, you would be like, oh, you're giving me the Mommy Dearest treatment. I thought it was a little strange. That being said, as far as possible foreshadowing, I think this movie and the book, the book was written first, obviously. It's a memoir of Christina Crawford and her relationship with her mother, Joan Crawford, obviously came first. And she has issues with the movie. She had spoken out against the movie, said it's like they didn't even read the book. From what I gathered from watching the movie, I just think that a lot of the focus is more on Joan, which is, and we'll get into this when I break down the book, it's kind of like hard because this was her, just another example of Christina's experience being overshadowed by who her mother was. And I think she wrote this memoir to share her story and to kind of set the record straight about what her life was like. And then when the movie was created, it focused on the movie star. It focused on Joan. And you lose a little bit, I think, of movies trying to tell the story from, like, a neutral perspective. But it's very clearly through the eyes of Joan, not through the eyes of Christina. And I thought that was interesting. I also think it's a movie that a young Lorelai would have connected with, because I think she would have seen Emily in Joan. And as an adult watching Gilmore Girls, I watched Gilmore Girls originally as a teenager, and I thought Emily was the worst. And as I watch it, you know, as a 30-year-old woman now, I see Emily in a much different light. And I think that the character of Lorelai is intentionally immature. Obviously, she gets pregnant at 16, and in the show here, she's 32, and she's raising a teenager. And I think the character is intentionally a little immature, and I think the things that, not to say that Emily wasn't a hard mother and wasn't hurtful to Lorelai, I think she absolutely was, and there's so many heartbreaking moments of their relationship, but I think that teenaged Lorelai would have watched Mommy Dearest and been like, that's what it's like living with my mother. And Joan Crawford being a much exaggerated version of what Emily was. I don't think Emily and Lorelai had an exact Joan and Christina relationship. But I think in Lorelai's head, it felt like that relationship. Even though I would argue that I believe, just from how it's portrayed in the show, that Christina Crawford went through much more abuse than Lorelai went through with her parents. But I think that her use of the reference here is because that movie was probably very influential for her. It was probably very formative for how she viewed her relationship with her mother. It was probably very relatable to her. And she views her childhood in a lot of the same ways that Christina probably viewed her childhood. As far as the book, I don't think we're referring to the book here at all. And I don't know that Rory would have read this book. It's not out of the realm of possibility. I just think it's highly unlikely. I think the book was largely overshadowed by the movie, which is kind of crazy because this was one of the first real Hollywood royalty type memoirs that came out. And especially she was writing it as the daughter of a superstar and this movie star, and Joan Crawford was the first wave of movie star. So you don't have precedence. And then being kind of the first generation of children of movie stars to come out with this book that's so scathing, that's so negative, and to have it met with backlash. Everybody rushed to Joan Crawford's defense and undermined what Christina was saying. And it was I think that's very typical of the time frame. You know, the book reminded me in a lot of ways of the book Jeanette McCurdy wrote, I'm Glad My Mom Died. And I think you look at the difference in reception that Jeanette's book now is, you know, lauded, whereas Christina's book then was just torn to pieces. And it's because of, obviously we're talking 50, 60 years between these books, but our cultural shift on the importance of movie stars and what they are and how we hold them. Back then, they were these gods almost. They were just like untouchable. And obviously I'm not going to pretend that there isn't still that cult like celebrity status today. There very much is, but I think there was a lot less of a human aspect in the 70s. Like now with social media, and so many celebrities are striving to be seen as relatable and, you know, quote unquote normal, especially with the rise of Instagram and TikTok, where that is what has thrived on those apps. Less Instagram, much more TikTok. But this idea of relatability is very important now. So these superstars, these movie stars need to seem relatable. Whereas back in the 70s, they needed to be unattainable and to seem like gods and to seem like untouchable icons and to be the exact opposite of relatable. You didn't want to appear to be like everyone else. You wanted to be the brightest, the most beautiful, the flashiest, everything except normalcy. So that was what was exalted. And in that, when she wrote this book, when she put out this memoir, she was cracking the facade. So she was the one to blame. So all the anger was turned on her. I don't think it helped that Joan Crawford was dead. And, you know, now you have this aspect of, oh, you're dishonoring her. She can't defend herself, things like that. But yeah, I think once the movie came out, and again, like I said, I think that the movie was very much, I don't know if it attempted to, but it definitely did not achieve being a movie that comes off as a non-partial third-party observer viewpoint. It comes off as being viewed through Joan's perspective. And there's a few scenes that really show that. One I can think of specifically is when Christina's playing with the makeup and she comes through and cuts her hair. We're following Joan through that scene as opposed to staying on Christina in that scene and having Joan kind of come up behind her. And I think that alone really sets that kind of feeling that this is Joan's story and not Christina's story. But when that movie did come out, it was very campy and very much just overshadowed and overpowered the book. Not to say that I don't think the book did well. It did. I just think that once the movie was out there, that is what drove the story more than the book did. And there's a lot of things in the book that the movie doesn't really touch on that I think what is left out from the movie really creates this sort of grayness of, well, was Joan Crawford really a bad mom, or was this just an ungrateful daughter writing a nasty book about her? So I don't know that Rory read the book. I think that she probably watched the movie with Lorelai. Lorelai 100% watched this movie. I don't know that either of them read the book. I wouldn't be surprised if they didn't. So let's get into the actual book and things we liked, things we didn't like. This is obviously a much different book than the others that we've read. This is a memoir. This is a biography, autobiography of sorts that Christina Crawford wrote. So it's a little different than Madame Bovary and Moby Dick and the other books we've read so far. It has a lot of, I think, pop culture significance. As I mentioned, this is like the first real celebrity tell-all expose memoir. And I think it has some literary significance too, because it ushered in this almost genre, which now, I mean, there's a celebrity book out all the time. You know, every month there's a new celebrity book out, and it's essentially what they are. They're these memoirs. And I think this was one of the first real ones to kind of break out of just a memoir that you see kind of splash on the front page and go away. It really had legs to it. I think the movie played into parts of that, but I think because it was so different from what people hadn't seen anything like this. They hadn't read anything like this before. So it really has kind of become like this almost like godmother of this whole genre. Like I said, it reminded me a lot of the book I'm Glad My Mom Died. I read that last summer, and it's a really powerful book. If you enjoyed reading Mommy Dearest, I would recommend reading that one. I liked that one more than Mommy Dearest, so that is something that I would recommend. If you enjoyed this book, I think you will highly enjoy that book as well. It's a lot harder to review a book where it feels like I read someone's diary. I don't want to critique someone's diary or their experiences. I thought that it was told I thought that they did a nice job of telling the story and, you know, kind of a chronological order. There was some bouncing around the beginning, so it was a little hard in the beginning to know, like, what age we were at, things like that. But I would say by the time we got into, like, middle school, we pretty much followed a pretty chronological order from that point forward. Which makes sense, because when you're little, I think that's when it's harder to remember what age certain things happened at, and when did this happen, and things like that. Some things I just, not that I didn't like, again, it feels weird to be like, oh, I didn't like this. It feels like I'm critiquing a diary, but knowing some of the facts from the aftermath, when you're reading a memoir, you want to be cognizant that there is going to be narrator bias, right? So when you tell your story, you want it told a certain way to paint yourself in a certain light. And I don't think there's many memoirs out there where somebody's going to be like, and this is what I did wrong. And not that they don't. People own things. I'm not saying that everyone who writes a memoir thinks they're infallible, but I do think that certain scenarios in the book, and knowing the people that came out against her book then later There are scenarios that, because of her life experiences, because of all of the things that had happened for years and years and years with her mother, I think there are scenarios that she describes in this book. And it's like, look, this is another example of her being jealous of me or taking this from me because she was trying to punish me, you know, things like that. That I wonder if they're, it's viewed through that lens more because of her experiences with her mother and less because that's the reality of the situation. The moment that specifically stands out to me is when she went into the hospital and her mother took over her role on the soap that she was on. And she views that as that was her mother's doing. And that was this betrayal and her taking something from her that she had worked hard for and knowing that it was just going to tank this opportunity for her. And the studio came out after the book was released and basically said, no, that's not how this went down. We approached her about doing this. That was not her idea. She was not trying to do this, defending Joan. And I'm not discounting Christina's feelings about the situation and her, there's a reason she thinks that that's what happened because she has a history to go off of saying that that's probably what happened. But I do think that a lot of times because of that history, because of that, those hurts, it clouds judgment and it also clouds scenarios. So that's all we see instead of being able to say, okay, well, who called who? And she even writes in the book that she's going in and out of consciousness, you know, so that whole time is a blur to her. So to say that that's how it went down, I don't think that even she would have argued that she knew with finality that that is exactly how it went down. But that was her experience with it. That was how she viewed it because of the history of manipulative and malicious things her mother did. So there are scenes like that one throughout the book where you kind of feel this bias against her mother because her mother had done so many awful things. That became the default response. Well, my mother must have done this on purpose to hurt me, because so many things were done on purpose to hurt her. The other thing that is hard about reading it now, it is rewritten at this point. There were things that she took out of the book due to backlash, due to being sued for, you know, I don't think it was libel. Either libel or defamation due to lawsuits with that. I think they always settled out of court, but she did rewrite certain sections. So knowing that, it's also a little hard to read because you always want to believe victims and give their, you know, give them the benefit of doubt, believe that what they're saying is true. But then when you know things like that, it makes you kind of go, huh, about other things that they wrote. And I'm not saying that I am discrediting the book. I think that she probably did experience most, if not all, of the things she described here. It just makes you kind of pull back a little bit when you know that she did have to go through rewrites. And it could just be a legal thing where she couldn't disprove what they were saying, so she took it out so that she didn't have any lawsuit trouble. I could see that happening too. It's just something that to keep in the back of your head, I guess, whenever you're reading something like this. But yeah, there was a lot about the book I did enjoy. Enjoy is a weird word. It was a really sad book to read. There were moments where I did feel a little bit like I was saying, like, oh my word, pick yourself up and just move on and do better for yourself. Why are you allowing her, especially when she got to the point where she was in college, it's like, oh, stop waiting for her to send you the money. You know, she's not sending you money. Go get a job and work yourself. But you, I say that, and I think that because of my own upbringing, and you have to turn that off when you're reading about somebody else's trauma, because there's so much about what she went through that was traumatic and could prevent her from really knowing how to take care of herself. She was pretty much in boarding schools from, you know, like middle school on, and was dependent upon Joan sending the money. And so when she went off to college, and when she is now in the real world, she was never taught how to be self-sufficient. She was never taught a lot of things about common sense and reality and living as an adult. She wasn't taught any of that. So as much as I was yelling at the book, like, just go get a job and pay your rent. Oh my gosh, why aren't you getting a job? No one had ever walked her through what life was supposed to look like for her and how she was supposed to handle being 17, 18 years old in New York City trying to find a way for herself. And she figures it out. She gets there. It's not like she just sat around waiting for Joan to send money all the time. But yeah, it was really good in that aspect. I think sometimes writing a memoir, like I said, it could be really easy to just write it so that you seem like you're great. And I think she does a nice job of writing it so that you can see the reality of the situation without shying away from showing some of the ways she could have done things differently as well. So for the rating, as far as readability, I gave it a 4 out of 5. It's a pretty easy read. Given the age of it, there are references to a lot of actors and actresses that I did not know. They're just, I'm sure when the book first came out, it was like reading a tabloid, like the names and the who's who, and you just knew how important these people were. But I read so many names, I was like, I don't know why that's important. I don't know who that is or why that matters. But there were a few in there that I knew, not completely dated, but definitely some people mentioned that if you don't look them up, you're not going to really understand the relevance or the impact of their names being used. Going back to what I said about the fact checking, what I did like about the version I read, which it was like an anniversary edition, so like I said, it was edited. She did include letters from people who showed up in the books who would give credence to what she said, which I thought was nice to provide credibility and try to combat all of the people who have spoken out against the book. For storytelling, I gave it a 3 out of 5. I think it's average. You know, the book moves along at a decent pace. You'll get these really long chapters, and then some chapters are really short, so that can be kind of hard to gauge, you know, when's this chapter going to be over. But overall, it's average. I think it didn't feel drawn out. Sometimes it did, like certain small sections, but not overwhelmingly so, not to the point that it was distracting. And yeah, I think it was overall just a normal average rating there. Fun and enjoyability, again, I gave it a 3. I think it's, you know, like I said, fun and enjoyability, not the best words. I didn't have a hard time reading it. It was captivating. It's a sad story. It's a story where you constantly find yourself like hoping that they sort out their relationship and then just being continually disappointed. But I kind of felt like you're just reading like a tabloid or an article in a newspaper. obviously it's much longer than that, but that's how you felt at times. Like you're just kind of catching up on the Kardashians, or you're catching up on, you know, your favorite actress's gossip. That's how it felt sometimes reading. And then other times, like I said, it felt a lot like, reminded me a lot of I'm Glad My Mom Died, especially the parts where she wrote about her time in the boarding schools and just feeling very isolated. So that was, like I said, it was average. I wouldn't say it's necessarily fun, but I think it's captivating enough to keep your attention. And then quality, gave it a 3. Like I said, all it's average. The book is average. It's not, that doesn't have like profound writing. She's just telling her story, and there's something to be said for that. That's compelling. I don't think it, I think what was major about this book is the impact it had culturally, and not necessarily its actual merit as a book. As far as memoirs go, it's very well written and a high quality book. But all in all, I don't think memoirs are really the books that really stand out as high quality necessarily. They're fun to read and they're enjoyable to read, but they're not these astounding pieces of literature. So altogether, the book got a 3.25. I would probably maybe bump it up a little bit just because of its cultural impact, but I think 3.25 would works. Educational application. I wasn't sure if I was going to do this for this one, because I don't really feel like this is a book you would want to assign for students. Maybe it's like a fun book to read if you like were getting to the end of the year and you wanted them to do something different. You could, but I just went with it. I was like, what if we were assigned this book? What's an essay I would write? And I toyed at the idea of how I would kind of phrase it, but I put A Mother's Love and Why We Need It is what I would title my essay. And then the thesis statement was, Christina's memoir highlights an overlooked and yet innate longing for maternal acceptance that without we look to establish with others, perform in an irreproachable manner, or deny ourselves love in all forms. Paragraph on establishing with others. She had this very close relationship with Mrs. Chadwick at the one boarding school. I would probably really pull from that and her desire to kind of create that family that she wasn't afforded. And then a paragraph on performing in an irreproachable manner. Just her, you know, her strive to be a high achiever in school, get the best grades possible, and just perform all around at a top level to earn Joan's love. Like, I think that's a main theme of the story, is of just her always seeking to earn that love and acceptance that she just couldn't find elsewhere. And when you take into the fact that she was adopted, that's a whole other aspect to this book that I didn't really touch on, but the adoption of these children and the iffy legality of how they were adopted. You have these kids who she taught them from a young age that, you know, adopted children are the most loved because they were chosen. And it's a great way to present adoption to a child that you've adopted. But when you're being abused the way that Christina, at least, and her brother, she doesn't mention much about her younger sisters, who are two of the people that came out and sued for defamation. She does not talk much on their experience because she was kind of older. She was older than them. And so when they were coming up, she was out of the house in these boarding schools. So maybe they were not treated in the same manner as Christina and her brother were. But when you think of kids who were adopted, you're always going to have this, I think that they'll always have this underlying sense of not being wanted. And then when you're at your adopted family's home, you're these people who are supposed to love you, and they're hurting you, or they're abusing you, or they're saying the types of things that Joan would say to them. It preys on that initial feeling of not being wanted and not being lovable and not being enough. So then when you have her going into these schools and just getting great grades, being bumped up levels, being a high achiever in sports and drama and things like that. It's just a very clear representation of her looking to earn this love that she wants so desperately and it never being enough and almost being punished for it at times. There are so many times where she's doing well and it angers Joan, so she retaliates against her and takes things away or takes away opportunities from her, blackballs her from the industry. She, you know, Christina wanted to then be in the entertainment industry, and she was blackballed at least twice by Joan because she was doing well, and that was a threat to Joan. And it's so sad to see that play out from someone who clearly is just doing all of this so that someone will love her. And then finally, a paragraph on denying ourselves of love in all forms. You see Christina go through these different relationships that just don't work out. And almost this attitude of either running away from relationships that could end well, or just allowing the relationships to fail. I think of the one high school relationship she had. She talks about how she knows he would have married her, but he couldn't handle all that she had going on. And it's almost as she doesn't give him the opportunity to show her that he can. And so you feel this kind of underlying theme of just settling for relationships that are not going to be able to fulfill you of love because you don't deserve it. I think that's definitely a deep-rooted feeling that Christina has from the relationship from mother and towards her mother as well. And then if I'm a teacher assigning this, again, I feel like this would be a fun type of assignment, like maybe allow kids, not even just reading Mommy Dearest, but allow them to pick a memoir to kind of read and then to write a chapter from their own memoir. It doesn't have to be very sad and traumatic. It could be of a positive memory, but allow them to write something that they would want included in their own memoir. I think that'd be a really cool way to kind of just like bring it full circle and tie it into them. So that is my review on Mommy Dearest. Again, it was a little different. It was a little harder for me to kind of figure out how this was going to fit into my format, but it was a fun book to read. Again, I hate saying fun because it's like super sad, but like I definitely enjoyed reading it and it held my interest and I enjoyed talking about different aspects of it with friends and family and now all of you. And then next on the docket is The Little Matchstick Girl, which will be its own challenge given that it is a picture book for children. But we will see how that plays into Gilmore Girls and the Read Like a Gilmore book list. So tune in next time. Have a good one.